Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank Mary and... I haven't got anything to do with it. I'm sorry. And if you'd had as many electroshock treatments as I had, you wouldn't touch this damn microphone either. Listen up. I can't hardly wait to find out what I'm going to say. You want to know the truth. I do. I've always considered some type of a privilege to be allowed to even come and sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope I don't get it through my sick head that I have a right to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble in here and get sober and stay that way. Everything that's good and decent in my life today is a gift from the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know there's some new people here tonight, and I want to let you know that my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was very nearly my last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. As I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959, the people talked to me about being sober. And my reaction to that was that Alcoholics Anonymous had nothing to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I sat in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. But that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out on my happy road of destiny by people in them little black and white cars. You know, it's amazing, isn't it, that the longer we stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, every once in a while some genius falls out of the woodwork to try to help us with this thing called alcoholism. A few years ago, they came through with what they thought was a breakthrough in the treatment of alcoholism. They called it intervention. I mean, they were running around becoming interventionists. People ran out there, I mean, they were intervening everybody. I didn't have any way of telling them that the Los Angeles County Sheriffs knew about it in 1940. And if you live the way I live, they'll intervene in your life, too. You don't need Mom and Papa. Now, I'm very pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind, which is more than I can say for some of you. I don't judge. I just observe and report the facts to you. And the reason I tell you that is because the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget that a little over 46 or 47 years ago, I came to in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary drifting out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God has expressed himself through our program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and eat like an animal. If I don't get nothing else out of this deal, I guess I could live with it all the way home. Makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you that that's where alcohol took me to. I hate people talking bad about alcohol. I mean, it's almost like somebody bad-mouthing an old girlfriend or something. You know what I mean? See, that's where I took me to. You got all the money, Mary? I saw your henchman there grab all the pink baskets and run. The only thing that alcohol ever did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to stumble into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have probably blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been some type of a misfit. I've never seemed to quite belong anywhere. I've always felt a little off-center. I don't know what it was. I don't know where alcoholism comes from, why it's limited to maybe 1 out of 10 people who drink. I don't have any idea. Neither does anybody else know where it comes from. Nobody knows why my body does not assimilate alcohol the way 9 out of the other 10 people who drink it. Nobody has that. They've spent millions of dollars trying to figure it out. They don't know any more about it than I do. I don't know whether you catch it from a toilet seat or a doorway or, you know, from your girlfriend. I don't know where you get it. It seemed like to me that I was born needing an answer. Now, the problem with that is I didn't know what my problem was. It's hard to seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what it is. Now, I'm restless and I'm irritable and I'm discontented. But I don't understand, or those are the symptoms of a spiritual malady. It has a written history that stretches back almost 5,000 years in written history. It's an illness of a spiritual nature. I didn't know that because the restlessness was in here. And so I started looking for a way out of this deal a long time before I ever got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I looked up one day and saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. My grandmother wouldn't think it's a big deal. I've been sober 45 years. Big deal, she'd say. I ain't had a drink for 90. So you should have had a couple, Granny. Make you feel better from time to time. My grandmother got everything she seemed to need out of life, plus them crazy people that she gave birth to, by going to church. I watched my grandmother on Sunday after they'd used her house for a war zone on Thursday. I watched her step across the bodies on a Sunday morning and put on the best things she had, and she took off and she was gone for a couple hours. And when she came back, something had happened to her. I could see it as clearly as I can see you. She was a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being, and she danced around these people and cleaned them up and sang songs to Jesus. Now, I took a look at that, and I filed that in my keen alcoholic mind. For you who are new in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the only place in the world you're ever going to hear about the keen alcoholic mind. You ain't never going to an Al-Anon meeting and hear about the keen alcoholic mind. They say things like the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet. You ask us a question, we'll give you an answer. We may not even know what the hell we're talking about, but we'll say something. If we run out of things to say, we'll just nod and say, uh-huh, that's true, yeah. You see, because I don't know my dilemma and don't know what's wrong with me, that I suffered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, this spiritual malady our book describes as alcoholism, because I don't know that, I thought all I'm going to have to do is go where my grandmother goes and do what my grandmother does. I'd be like my grandmother. I'm not like my grandmother. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I did not know that. So as a child, I put my hand in my grandmother's hand, and I went over and sat in my grandmother's church and watched my grandmother have something happen to her, and I'm sitting there waiting for it to happen to me. And I don't remember nothing happening to me at all, if you want to know the truth. But I do know there was nothing wrong with my grandmother's church. I do know that there was something wrong with the jackass sitting in it, me. What I was doing in that church is what I did all my life prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here, probably even a great deal of time today. I'm looking for something way out here to make me feel better in here, which only goes to prove to me that the problem has always been there. And what happened to me, I sat on the back porch of my grandfather's house and watched my grandfather drink whiskey out of a fruit jar. He set it down and I picked it up and took a drink of alcohol. That's all I did. And the next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me an alcoholic. I'm not alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. What I damn near die learning that everybody that drinks it doesn't get it. Because it was not a bad reaction. It was a good reaction. If I'd had a bad reaction to alcohol, you'd have another talker here tonight. I hear people sit around and say, I drank that stuff and it snot come out my nose and I gag, puke, wet my pants. I said to them, if it ever did that to me, I wouldn't drink it. That stuff went inside of me and instilled the madness. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What happened to me when I put alcohol into my system, what happens to maybe 1 out of 10 people who drink it? Then and only then am I drinking to overcome a craving that's beyond all human understanding and beyond all human help. I didn't know that. But what happened is that I found a problem or a pattern for living that I followed for the next 20 years of my life. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They stood me in front of a judge in Compton and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. Now, that's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around. I went from reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I'm a little more partial to nut house, if you want to know the truth. It's a little more macho. Oh, come on, for Christ's sake. If you're going to be bad, you ought to be bad. I mean, don't quit drinking because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. Alcoholics Anonymous works a hell of a lot better when you run out of options. I gave it everything I had out there. I threw everything into the battle and lost the battle. Didn't know what I was fighting. I walked out of institutions time after time after time from the time I was 9 years old as physically sober as I am this moment. And not one time did I ever say to myself, self, do you realize how long it's been since you've had a series of electroshock treatments? Why don't you have a drink? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out there and kill your baby brother? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and tear your mother's heart out one more time? Why don't you have a drink of alcohol and go out and stand on them street corners with them gangs and play tough? Why don't you go out there and stand on them street corners and destroy people's lives and use them and tear them up? Why don't you have a drink and do that? No. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics like me or alcoholics of my type that Bill writes about in her book do not take a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time to get drunk. We don't take a drink of alcohol after being sober for a period of time to go out and have a party. I took a drink of alcohol just to go, whew. But you see, that's all it takes if you're an alcoholic of my type, because once I've come to the desire and the phenomenon of craving takes over, I got to drink it to the end. I'm on a furlough from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. I can tell. The reason you never heard of it is because it was experimental stages of Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad that crap was. It never got near a vineyard. I can tell you that. But I'm drinking this stuff on this street corner with my little gang, and we're ganging. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I can tell you. Could you imagine what would go on in some of these discussion meetings in the morning? Works, all I can tell you. It's like lighting the afterburners on a rocket ship that took me deeper into hell is all I can tell you. Because I never went anywhere up. I started on cheap wine and worked down, and that ain't easy. I'm sitting on that same street corner a couple of years later on a furlough from another reform school. And I'm eating these pellets and I'm drinking this cheap wine. And I don't know, I might have been smoking a little of that non-habit-forming weed for all I know. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm, ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out there in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. I'm like a plague. There's a reason for that. See, I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving. I've got an ego big in this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here, and maybe even a great deal of time today, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lives upon the face of this earth. I'm not interested in you at all unless you've got something I want. Then when I get it, I catch it like so much trash, and I move on about my business. That's the way I live my life. Now, I didn't live my life like that one day or one week until I got a court card. I lived my life like that from my earliest recollection of life until a long time after I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the sum total of that, when I came to in that cell in solitary confinement in that penitentiary not very far from here, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. I do not have any right to have any of them back just because I got sober. Everything that's good and decent in my life is some type of an unearned gift that I received from the God I discovered sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959. I didn't come here to get sober. I was sober. I came here because the institution I was in let women come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous almost 45 and a half years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. That may have been the attraction that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's not what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, my last time out, for all intents and purposes, I killed me. I had 2 years before my last arrest doing everything I wanted to do to me whenever I wanted to do it to me with as much money as I needed to do it with. And I ended up almost dead on arrival at the old Los Angeles County Jail. I came to with a doctor standing at the foot of my bed in the old prison ward of the county jail saying, "Son, you're going to die and there's nothing we can do for you." That did not seem like a bad idea to me. Matter of fact, it seemed like a damn good idea. And the reason it seemed like a good idea, because I was tired of living the way I was living. I just could not go on and fake it and use it and carry on the way I had been going all my life. I was trying to keep up the images of some type of a big-time gangster, some type of a big-time convict, some type of a big-time dope dealer, some type of a big-time whatever it was. I'm tired. I can't keep it up anymore. And I don't know what to do. I can't get rid of the nightmares that I'm living in. I can't wake up in the middle of the night anymore with sweat coming out of me. My mother standing on the other side of a gravesite while I'm handcuffed between two detectives watching them bury my baby brother. I can't stand the look in my mother's eyes at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when I come to when I'm sober. I can't stand that anymore. Death seemed like a good idea. A hell of a lot better than living the way I was living and going on and doing the thing I was doing and hurting the people I was hurting. I just couldn't take it any longer. But I didn't die. I just laid there. I watched day turn into night and night turn into day. And every day that doctor come walking into that room and telling me I'm going to die. And finally one day, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh God, help me." There was no blinding flash of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. I'll tell you how sick I was. 2 weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison putting me back on the bed I'd just gotten off of. The reason for that is right back here in the back of my mind today, like it was 45, 46 years ago, is the knowledge that when I can't stand life on life terms any longer, I know what makes the big hurt go away. And being an alcoholic, of the description of our book called Alcoholics Anonymous, one who suffers from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, the book calls it a spiritual malady of an illness nature. Being an alcoholic of that type, if you put me in the wrong place at the wrong time in the wrong set of circumstances, I'll be drunk. There's no immunity from that. I didn't know that. But that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. My little grandmother, who loved me and adored me, I was her shining light, and I watched my grandmother cry her eyes out over me. The last time I saw my grandmother, she was kneeling at my bed in Menninger's Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, and I'm laying there in my fighting weight, 128 pounds, a color of Ed's shirt down there, yellow. And my grandmother was praying for me. I'm not saying that my grandmother's prayer didn't keep me out of harm's way for a period of time. But I can tell you something I know without a shadow of a doubt, because I've had a chance to examine it for the last 40-some-odd years of my life. It wasn't until I asked God for help that I could possibly get it. I had to ask it. I had to make this separation between me and God and take away everything in between. And that's what stumbled into your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't spiritually fit when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I moved in and sit down in the back row. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. I looked up on the backboard. I saw two big A's. I thought I'd wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I said, this clown sat next to me, what's this? He says, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. My God. I sunk down in my seat. Anybody see the big gangster hanging out with them winos? Been Gangsters Anonymous, Over Hip Anonymous, Doo Doo's Anonymous, Dope Fiends Anonymous. Yeah. You can get into that. All I know is it makes addicts seem kind of candy-ass to me. I just report the facts to you. It does. I tell you what's scary sometimes. November the 4th, 1959, I sat in a room. I stared at an answer I had sold my soul for. I don't recognize the answer because I don't know what the problem is. Over and over and over and over, I'd like to repeat it to you. You cannot seek the answer to a problem if you don't know what the problem is. And what you people proved to me when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous by what you said, that I was not an alcoholic. You said things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. Everything is just wonderful. Sitting back there in inventory point where I'm sitting with the rest of the half measures, I'm saying to myself, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm crazy. I wish I was alcoholic, I used to say. If I could just be alcoholic, then everything would be okay. All I'd have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. You see, what I am trying to identify with being an alcoholic with a spiritual illness, I'm trying to identify with a drinking problem. A drinking problem is solved by not drinking. A spiritual malady of an illness called alcoholism needs a spiritual answer. I don't know that. So how could I be alcoholic? What fascinated me were people like you. I couldn't figure out what you're doing. Why in God's world would you get up on Sunday morning, leave your family, drive 100 miles up those old back roads and spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to you? People like me who sat in the back row and made fun of you. Let me tell you how sick that is. Took me a long time to figure this out because I'm a quick study. Here I am sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home, and I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Oh, but I'm hip, baby. If I'd have had a hat, I'd have had it on backwards. I was so hip, the balls of my feet tickled me when I walked. I just kind of bounced like one of them little doofy dolls in the back of cars. Every other word is man, and I'm hip, and what's going on, dude? My vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. Mother triggered it all. Just the way it went. I'm just, oh God. It's hard to realize just how very sick I was when I got here. I don't know what this thing is. You fascinated me. I said to one of these guys one time, I finally got up enough courage to walk up to one of these people who came in and said things like this to him. I said, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? No, I didn't say it like that because I was too hip to say things like that. Hey! What do you get out? That kind of stuff. When you're hip, you're hip. Man. He gave me one of them deep AA answers that just floors spiritual giants like me. Well, son, he said, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. I didn't think that was funny. I pondered that for a solid month trying to figure out what the hell is he talking about. See, I don't understand that. But if you're new, you can understand why anybody in their right mind would give up their time to put something like this on, to stand back behind them counters, to make the coffee, to do all the things, to bring their archives and all this stuff, the history of our magnificent fellowship into this place, to be a committee to time after time their thankless jobs, would get in their cars and drive up to those institutions and see jackasses like me who got all the answers to the world sitting there. Take a time. When you can answer questions like that, you won't have to ask the questions. I don't know about a lot of things, but I do know this. That because of my experience of averaging between 5 and 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week for over 40-some years of my life, my old sponsor, Norm Alpey, when he was alive, talked a great deal about crossing over an invisible line to uncontrolled drinking. I have no qualms with that whatsoever. But I'm here to tell you without a shadow of a doubt there is an invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. I don't care what anybody tells you. And that's the line when you got to cross over from being a taker to being a giver. And you got to learn to give just for the hell of giving it, expecting nothing in return, not even staying sober. You just have to do it. Now, your counselor may argue with that. But my life was saved very drastically by a man that I knew that did 23 flat years in the penitentiary who came into that penitentiary on a panel. I watched this man walk out of an institution. And my thoughts to him were the thoughts I'd always carried. This is what I said to him the day he walked out of that institution many years prior to that. Old man, you can't make it out there. They won't let you. That was my M.O. That was the way I believed. Way down deep in my soul, I believed people like me did not have a chance. And he walked in, I could not believe what I... This guy was my baseball coach when I was the star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for 2 years. I put that on a resume one time. My sponsor told me I had to. I couldn't believe he stood at a podium very much like this and told me something that all the therapists and the psychiatrists and the preachers and the teachers and the wardens and the coaches and the lawyers and the judges and the penologists, all those people never knew. He stood very simply at a podium, looked down where I was sitting, and said, you don't have to live like this no more if you don't want to. He says, you don't have to do it like this no more. Nobody had ever told me that. They'd been telling me all my life, you shouldn't drink these things, swallow these things, smoke these things, shoot these things, but nobody ever told me how to live without doing it. I went up to him after the meeting. I said, Les, how do you learn how to live? That's all I wanted to know. I didn't want to know how to be sober from that day to this day and live this good life of mine. He gave me the answer that's seemingly being missed in Alcoholics Anonymous from time to time today. He told me there was a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If I'd go get that book, he'd go home and pray that I'd find some part of me in it. I went over to the prison library and stole the book. Well, you got to remember, if you got a big-time gangster image, you're not going to be on some type of a lame thing like Alcoholics Anonymous with your name attached to it. You got reputations, you know. And I opened up the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't open up the book Alcoholics Anonymous to discover this magnificent way of living, the spiritual answer to this spiritual malady of mine. I opened up to prove to you my case was different, that it wouldn't work for me. So I started to read into our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and strange things started to happen to me. I started to identify what was written in that book. I started to identify slightly with the doctor's opinion about the phenomenon of craving as I could see it take place in my life. I started to identify with the four horsemen of the terror that Bill Wilson experienced when he was sober, because that's what I experienced when I was sober. Then one day I found myself sitting in a room with a man doing what our program of recovery says is a fifth step. And I heard myself say this to that man. I heard myself say to this man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside me where I live, there came a freedom that I carry with me this very instant. As I stand here before you tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. And I suffer from an illness called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I could not have our program. And the reason I couldn't have it is because I separated me from you. I'm a little better than you. I'm a little slicker than you. I'm a little younger than you. I'm a little keener than you. I'm a little richer than you. I'm a little poorer than you, but I'm not like you. When I became just like you, or at least like the people who wrote our book, it became my great privilege to be allowed to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 5,000 years of recorded history. And this is what blows my mind. I get to do it. That's what gets to me. I don't have to. I get to. There's a tremendous play on words there. I get to live this way. I get to make coffee at meetings. I get to go on panels in the institutions. I get to go to Galt, wherever Galt is. I get to be abused by my sponsor. You don't hear much cheering for that from you gooders. There's a tremendous line in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the second paragraph of the third chapter that seemingly is lost somewhere along in the translation to a lot of things. The line is very simple. It says, I have to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. That means concede. That means I got to give up the battle. I got to quit fighting it. Concede means to give it up. I'm whipped. There's a line right behind that that will tell you why 9 out of 10 people or 9 out of 10 alcoholics today still die drunk. The line says the delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. You know, they opened up the doors of that penitentiary on the fourth day of June, 1961, and turned me loose. Now, I ain't got no kind of skills out there whatsoever. I had never had a job. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a Social Security card. I never knew what it was like. I came out of the institution armed with something very simply this. I had spent 19 months of my life studying our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and trying to put into operation the first 9 steps of our program of recovery. And in so doing, a dream came about that maybe someday you would let me come and sit in your meetings. I said, if you will ever give me the great privilege of sitting in your meetings, I'll do anything you ask me to do. I'm very pleased tonight to be able to tell you that for almost 44 years of my life, I have done whatever it is that Alcoholics Anonymous has asked me to do. Not always willingly, sometimes grudgingly. We do trudge the road of happy destiny. You know? But I always do because, you see, I owe a date grant here. I have a great debt and a great legacy that was handed down to me by unselfish, giving people. They gave it to me. They didn't charge for it. They just gave it to me. They said, come and do this. Be with us. Do what we got to do. I went home to see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. I picked her up, put her on a couch, said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I'd like to tell you, I got sober, my mom got sober, my dog got sober, my cat got sober, and we're the sober. So that's not my experience. My mother drank herself to death. And I had a ringside seat watching it, which is not a very pleasant thing to do. Powerless to do anything about it. See, I believe very specifically when the book says I'm powerless, I believe that. Because it had been anybody in this world I wanted to get sober, it had been my mother. I love my mother. But I watched her drink herself to death. In and out of AA she'd come. Drink herself sober, come to AA. Sit here until her butt got tired and go back out and drink. She just succumbed to the desire. And then the phenomenon of craving took her. That was the last thing my mother ever saw. I sit and held my mother's hand. When she died, at my view, I said to my mother a moment before she died, are you proud of your son, Johnny? Man, he came out of them gangs, out of them streets, out of them penitentiaries. He found out he was alcoholic. He joined that A&A thing. He lives a good life. Were you proud of your son? You know what my mother would have told you? My mother would have said to you, my son, Johnny, is not an alcoholic. His life got a lot better when he quit running around with them Mexicans. Now, I guess if you were to talk to one of these 90-day wonders who have fallen out of one of these educational things, they'd have said, I guess your mama's in a state of denial. A denial is a river in Egypt. My book, Alcoholics Anonymous, does not describe our disease or our illness as a denial. Live in a delusion. The delusion that someday, somehow, we're going to control and enjoy our drinking. It's a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. That's not a denial. You know what a denial is? It's a lie. Anybody tells me he's in denial, I tell him, you're just a liar. Well, how would you know that, they said. I said, because every time I got arrested, I denied it. I got involved in institutional work because it's my love. If you want to know the truth, the message was carried to me. Why wouldn't I want to carry it back? See, if you've never been given anything, then you don't need to put back anything. And if you only get back what you're putting in and then you don't have to give back anymore, then you haven't got anything in the first place. Just been a temporary passer through here where you drink a cup of coffee. I had some magnificent people lead me. The first one was a guy by the name of Norm Alpe, who was my sponsor. Now, I didn't ask him to sponsor me. He told me he was going to sponsor me. He said it at a meeting. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, for Christ's sakes, Norm. You just told me you're going to be my sponsor. He said, if I can't run my life, Johnny, what makes you think I can run yours? Then I said to him, then what am I supposed to do? He says, why don't you do what I do? I says, what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. For you people who are running your own life, I just broke down the mystery of sponsorship.
monkey see, monkey do. You just better pick the right monkey, that's all. You better get one of them monkeys that says, get in the damn car, we're going to Folsom. Get in the damn car, we're going to a treatment center. Get in the damn car, we're going here. Get in the damn car. I didn't have a car, so I had to get in the damn car. The first thing my sponsor told me was to get a job. Get a job and go to work. He said, you're a bum. I said, I'm not a bum. He said, what are you? I said, I'm a AA member. He says, no, you're an AA bum. Bums don't work. He said, you ought to get off of welfare. I said, don't you ever say that to me, Norm Alpy. I'm going to hit you. He said, what do you call living in penitentiaries, Johnny? Self-supporting through your own contribution? So I had to call him up in the middle of the night to see if he had answered the phone. Norm? He said, yes, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. Say, Norm, listen here, Norm, my program ain't working, Norm. He'd say, try ours. He'd say things like, jackass, your program never did work. Your program at the ripe old age of 26 years old got you crawling around on your hands and knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary. That's your program. He says, now, on a part-time basis, our program has helped you live a pretty good life. Huh. I don't want to hear that. I called him up one night. Norm, what do you want, jackass? I said, Norm, I know you're going to go to this meeting over in Santa Ana tonight, and I'd like to ride along with you because I want to go to a meeting with you, Norm. So, okay, I'll be by there 6 o'clock. I'll be standing on the street corner. I ain't waiting for you. And I did what is kind of dangerous for a guy with a couple years sobriety. I started to think about it. Newcomers, you should either drink or think. Leave the thinking alone, because that'll lead you to drinking. We're going to a little place over in Santa Ana, a little one-car garage. It was a meeting, and smoke. Everybody smoked. You couldn't even see the speaker if you're sitting in front of him. It was a hot July night, and I got to thinking. So I went in there and put on my shorts and my thongs and my new tank top, slicked back my hair and put my shades on and stood at the street corner, waited for my sponsor. My sponsor drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. So at 11 o'clock at night or 12 o'clock at night, I called him. Norm, what do you want, jackass? I said, Norm, you left me standing on the street corner like I'm an idiot. He said, you are an idiot. You act like an idiot, you behave like an idiot, you dress like an idiot, so chances are you're an idiot. I said, you left me stand on the street corner. He said, yeah. I said, why? He says, you want to know? I said, yes. He says, I'm going to ask you a question. Well, that changed everything. I told him, what do you want to know? He said, would you go to church dressed like that, Johnny? And I said, no. He says, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. Then he said, then we got it on. I said, you yell at me in meetings, tell me to shut up and sit still. Why do you do that? You won't let me get up and go to the bathroom. Why do you do that? He said, Johnny, if you want to go to meetings and you don't want to listen, that's your business. You ever stop to think that maybe somebody else does? I said, no, I haven't. He said, I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. Maybe you ought to sit still in a meeting once in a while and give somebody else the common courtesy who's sitting next to you to listen to whatever's being said. Because you may need to hear everything that's said in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Jesus. I didn't need all that. Couldn't let me drive a car. I didn't have a driver's license. He said that citizens like him had a right to be protected from jerks like me. Who was going to do all this nonsense. But I finally got around to getting the car. called him up. I got some money. I bought a car. I said, Norm, I got a car. He's good. He said, you got insurance? I hung up. The day finally came when I had a driver's license, a car, and insurance. I didn't ask old Norm nothing. I just bought the car and drove it over to his house. And I never will forget, he came around at the back of his house. He had one of them short sleeve shirts on, or them shirts that you wear that don't have any arms on it. He looked at me and he looked at that car. He looked at me and he looked at that car. He looked at me and he come over, he put his arms around me, and he knew it was legal. He said, Johnny, maybe you're starting to get the idea. Maybe you're starting to get the idea there ain't a damn thing special about you just because you don't drink anymore. Just because you're not locked up anymore, and just because you don't drink anymore, doesn't mean that you can do anything you want to do to suit yourself. All these other people have been out here doing it for years, while you've been making a jackass out of yourself, running around them streets, living in them institutions. As a matter of fact, a guy like you, you got to be just a little bit better than that. You got to have some type of a description of what a member of Alcoholics Anonymous should look like. You should try to look better in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous than a newcomer. You should try to look like something. You should sit in a meeting like you would go to somebody else's house and take your hat off with some type of courtesy, like you would when you were going to visit somebody else's house. You ain't out in the streets anymore. You ain't out running the streets anymore. You're in a spiritual vacuum called Alcoholics Anonymous, and you should behave that way. You should act that way. You should set some type of an example for the people who are coming behind you. And when you go to institutions, you should dress accordingly when you go to an institution. When I go on panel sometime, I'm absolutely ashamed of some of you people who come in there. It seems like you arbitrarily or deliberately try to dress down to go see those people in those institutions. What a shame that is. You should have to dress up and come up to their standards. You should have to give them something to shoot for, not that you have to come down on their level. I'm absolutely ashamed of people when I walk into an institution and see them dressed in Levi's and jeans, trying to come down on the convict's level. The reason that is, one time I'm sitting in an institution, and I'm in a penitentiary, and I'm dressed sharp. I got a pair of crease pants on, a pair of shine shoes, and a good shirt. And they brought this clown in on this panel. He had a pair of bib overalls on and a red flannel shirt and tennis shoes. And he had the audacity to stand up at a podium and say, if you want what we have. I'm sitting in a penitentiary dressed better than you are, jackass. Why would I want what you got? I was up in Folsom a couple months ago at the prison that I came out of. And like I always do when I go to an institution, I'm dressed pretty much like I am right now. But if I go to a prison I came out of, I put on a dog. I buy the best I got, I put on the best I got, and I go in there. And a guy walked up to me and described exactly how much everything I had on cost. You might want to think about that when you go to an institution. They know what a pair of $3 jeans cost. They know what a pair of flip-flops cost and a T-shirt. They know what it's like. Why don't you give them something to shoot for? The people who carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me gave me something to shoot for. They didn't try to dress down on my level, come down on my level, or try to talk down to me. They came in there and offered me their love and their acceptance, and they carried this program in such a magnificent package that I would have died and went to hell for a piece of the ribbon it was wrapped in. And when I came out of that penitentiary, I wanted to come and sit with you. That's all I wanted to do. And you've given me things to do that I never even believed possible that a guy like me could do. You gave me a chance to go to work. You gave me a chance to have a family, to raise my children. Their mother committed suicide the day before my 6th AA birthday out of the penitentiary. I had to raise those two little girls. it turned out pretty good. My youngest daughter is Jesus. She just got back from England, studying in England, for Christ's sake. I told her she got to hurry up and make some money to take care of her poor old daddy who's getting old. I can't tell you every meal I've eaten. It's been a banquet, and every day I've lived out there on the sunny side of the street. I've been through business failures. I've been through divorces. I've committed adultery a couple of times. I'm not proud of all those things. But I'm a basic human being. Basic. But I've never quit coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've stayed in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous guilty because of my actions. But I never quit going. I never say no to an AA request. I always go when I'm asked. I always get in the car and go. Sometimes very grudgingly, sometimes kicking and screaming, but I always go. And the reason I go is because, like I told you, I owe a great debt. You see, I haven't been returned anything. I've been given it all. What have I been given? I've been given what the book Alcoholics Anonymous promises me to give. It says, I am going to know serenity and I'm going to know peace. The book says, no matter how far down the scale I have gone, I will see that my experience will benefit others. Isn't that an amazing assumption? It's funny that it only comes in after the 9 steps. And one of the things I never want to hear when I go on a panel at an institution, I never want to hear anybody ever say to anybody out there, when you get out, when you get out, when they get out, it's too late. If they ain't got it by the time they hit the gate, they ain't going to catch it out here. They got nothing better to do than to give them something to shoot for. We've got nothing better to do than to talk about a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, about a book that has the instruction to this good life. And while they're in the institution, they have time to do it. When I was doing it in the book, I had a lot of ridicule and a lot of, you talk about peer pressure. You get raised in these institutions in the state of California, then all of a sudden start putting a book under your arm and going to AA meetings. You're going to get it. Holy Joe, Jerusalem Slam. What the hell are you doing, Johnny? What kind of game are you playing now? When I quit fighting them, they quit asking. And every once in a while, one of my old gang members would come up to me and say things like, hey, Weddle, maybe you can make it. Maybe we can't, but maybe you can. Give it the best you got out there, Weddle. That's okay. I've given it everything I got. And everything I've got is given it back to me in abundance. Abundance. I live most of the time with a quiet heart. I live most of the time in a kind of peace and happiness about me that is hard for me to describe. I live with a God of my very own, not my grandmother's God who punishes little boys who are bad, not some type of a organized religious God of some kind, but God of my very own. When I was new, I used to run around with an old man by the name of Chuck, and like a father to me. And he used to say things to me. I used to try to read him things, and he wouldn't let me read them. I used to say things to him, and I'd always get the words wrong, and I'd try to pronounce them, and he wouldn't let me. And one night we were coming back from Santa Maria. We'd been up to one of his institutions, and he was in the car driving. And I stole a pamphlet and tried to read it to him. It's why we were chosen. I said, let me read this to you, Papa. So I read it to him. He said, what is it? I said, why we were chosen. He said, stop it right there. We're not chosen. What makes you think we're chosen, Johnny? I said, it says right here. I don't care what that says. He said, we're all God's kids. If I am, you are, and if you are, I am. If I'm not, neither are you, and if you're not, neither am I. He said, he makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust. So I said to him, okay, if I'm not chosen, how come I'm sober? I know people who are far better than I'll ever be who can't stay sober. He said, that's very simple, son. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids, and you act like it. I said, dude, what do God's kids act like? He said, oh, they just wander around in the world and they try to get things done that need to be done. And they do it for free and they do it for fun. Now, when I die and I get to wherever I'm going up there, God has given me many, many gifts. He gave me a woman that I'm married to that I absolutely and totally adore, who I've married far beyond my station, if you want to know the truth, who loves me in spite of my selfishness and my self-centeredness and my self-serving. But when I die and get to wherever I'm going, I used to watch God's kids, a guy by the name of Norm Alpe, night after night after night after week after week after week, get in his car and go out and try to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. I watched my Papa Chuck do it time after time after time for 25 years the same way, just trying to help God's kids get things done that need to be done. And my sponsor for the last 20 years, a guy by the name of Clancy, I watch him closer than anybody does. He does virtually the same thing. Now, see, when I die and I get to wherever I'm going, if there ain't people like Norm and Chuck and Clancy, if there ain't flowers and birds and pretty people, then I hope I don't go there. Because before there were people like that and people like you in my life, I lived in absolute hell. If your hell had been any hotter than where mine was on them street corners and in them penitentiaries and in them nut houses, I pray God you never have to go there. Because my life today is an absolutely wonderful thing. Every living thing that's good in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It is a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good people like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you.